Hello, Couch Constables. Yes, we are back. Thank you for your patience. I'm sorry we did not get around to this in January. It has been a very hectic last few months, to be sure.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. The highlight of which is that we are now married.
Woohoo!
So, yeah.
Tax breaks.
Tax breaks.
Main reason.
And love, you know.
Sure.
But anyway, so I am super excited to be back. I'm super excited for you to hear what we have here for you today. What do you have to say? Do you have any announcements?
Yes, I do. We have exciting updates to our format. We're actually going to change things around a bit. As I'm sure you all know and love, that we read a cornbread recipe at the end of every episode. We're going to kind of nix that, but please feel free to send in your recipes, and because I love to cook and bake, so we will totally make your cornbread recipes. Or if you want to take pictures of it, we'll totally share it on social media just because we love food, honestly.
Yeah, going forward, the cornbread and cornbread and crimes, this could be more representative, symbolic of the southern cases we're going to be covering. For now.
And also, we'll be changing other parts of our format as well. We'll now have 2 episodes a month. I know you guys are so used to our strict regime of episodes once a month,
That was sarcasm, if you didn't detect.
yes, going forward, we will have 2 episodes a month, one where we stick with our usual format of one dough and one Georgia mystery. And the second episode will just be news in the, I want to say crime world, but that
True
sounds
crime.
wrong. True crime era regime.
True crime or criminal justice field.
There we go. What he said. Yeah.
I don't know where you're getting regime from.
That was very violent.
Yeah.
The regime has
The
come.
regime.
The regime of
Oh
the couch
gosh.
constables. Look out, world.
Okay. Also, I want to go ahead and plug our social media. I know I often do that at the end of the episode, although I feel like we could probably reach more people if we do this in the beginning. So you can find us on Facebook at Cornbread and Crime, on Instagram at Cornbread and Crime, all one word. And at Twitter, you can find us at Cornbread Crime. So there's no and in the Twitter. And let me tell you, folks, I am very excited for upcoming episodes. We've got some good slate of content and some stuff that hopefully comes through that's just very exciting, and I cannot wait to share with you. And with that, I think we're ready to kick things off here. Sarah, I believe you're going first today.
So today I'm going to be talking about case 134 UFGA, which I'm going to call her Westview Doe, but other people call her Wanda Doe. Do you know which one people prefer? It doesn't matter.
Not in there.
Okay. Anyway, Westview is a small neighborhood about 2 miles west of Atlanta. It's very close to where she was found, so that's how I came upon Westview. Westview Doe was discovered on April 5th, 1995. She was found in a shallow grave behind a known drug house that was vacant at the time. In fact, the autopsy report refers to this area as an area which is frequented by crack addicts and prostitutes, which is definitely a wording that we don't really would use today.
Yeah, I guess not. I don't know how common that just coming right out and saying that would be.
Yeah, it's not very
Professional?
correct or
I don't
professional,
know.
yeah.
Maybe. Maybe not. I don't know.
Maybe at that time, though.
Maybe at the time. Yeah, you always gotta look at things in the context of the time that it occurred.
She was found in a white disaster bag wrapped in a white linen sheet. So I tried to look up what a disaster bag is, but I think it's just like a industrial size, like trash bag, like a
That makes
sturdy
sense.
bag,
Yeah.
something. And she was wearing the following: a faded light blue short sleeve button up t-shirt. The autopsy states that there was a pocket on the shirt, but doesn't say where, so I would just assume it was a breast pocket. Faded denim bugle boy jeans, which is something my brother wore, so that's why I was like, what? And it had an elastic white waistband with a drawstring. The pockets were empty, but there was a safety pin attached to the right pocket. She was also wearing multicolored underwear with the repetitive design of the cartoon character Tweety Bird. She was found wearing black Adidas dynaprene? How would you say that word?
That looks, that appears to me to be the word dynaprene. I've never heard of that.
That's the thing. I looked it up nowhere on the internet.
I wonder, because I know that there's a few like sneakerhead subreddits that are just 100% into that subculture, I guess you could call it.
Like collectors.
Collecting sneakers and all that. So I wonder, I think we talked about this. We meant to post that in there to see if maybe anyone knew if these sneakers are unique in any way of some sort.
We can after this.
Definitely. Certainly. Hey, yeah. And if you're listening to this and you've heard of those kind of sneakers before, let us know.
Yeah, we'll also post pictures along so everyone can see. Yes, please let us know. It's a bit of a mystery. And then also there was one single white athletic sock beneath her body. It was estimated that the time of death was a few days prior to her being found because there were beginning stages of decomposition. There are a few conflicting reports on her age estimation, but only by a few years. Most reports claim she was 15 to 30 or 18 to 30. Either way, she still does have a NCMEC profile. And, you know, NCMEC, they always kind of recreate those photos to look like school pictures.
Yeah.
And I also wonder if they tend to age her at teenage years because of her underwear and, like, her clothing at that time.
Yeah. And I guess, yeah. I mean, it's kind of a wide age range.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess she does kind of skew on the younger side.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess it makes sense. I mean, NCMEC, I guess, is just doing what they know how to do best.
Yeah, and it's a very good photo. She has a few identifying features. She has a mole on the top of her right foot near her big toe, and she had a large gap between her two front teeth. Her fingerprints are on file, but unfortunately, the DNA wasn't sufficient enough to keep it, which is probably, they needed back in the 90s, large amounts of DNA versus today, where we have touch DNA. And
yeah, I wonder if this could be one of those cases where they can go back and maybe get some more DNA. You know, maybe exhume the body and get some DNA. I don't know if there's any roadblocks to that currently, but hey, this could be a good candidate for that.
What if they cremated her? Can they still get DNA from remains?
Well, that's a good question. One that I don't have the answer to. I don't know if you can get... That's a good question for Google right there.
The true couch constable.
Yeah.
So there's no definitive matter or cause of death. There were no drugs in her system and no trauma marks to anywhere in her body or any part of her body. So it's really quite the mystery. The reason why people call her Wanda Doe is because, according to the Doe Network, she possibly went by the name of Wanda. That's the only area that it's on, is on the Doe Network.
To me, that sounds like, if that's actually something that's in some sort of release, then it sounds like almost that my guess would be that that's just come naturally through some sort of investigation. Like maybe they've talked to people in the area. I mean, if it was a known drug house, they probably know some people involved there, seen around there in the neighborhood, that's in the true area. So if I had to just take a stab in the dark, I'd say that maybe they talked to some of those people and said, oh yeah, that sounds similar. That sounds like Wanda. Or yeah. Maybe someone they didn't know too well who frequented the area and they just happened to have a first name basis with her.
Yeah, and it's possible because it goes on. It's like, she possibly went by Wanda and she may have been in Adamsville and she might be around Ashby, Dill, and Beecher Street areas. So it's all like, maybe it could be her.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, if you do have any information on her, please contact the Fulton County Medical Examiner's Office. And actually, if you go on the Doe Network, that information's outdated, but the phone number's still correct. So don't email that guy, because I got an email back saying he doesn't work there anymore. He retired a few years ago. So just call the phone number if you have any information.
Yes, definitely. With anything, if you think you have information pertinent to these cases and investigations, do not contact us. Contact the authorities responsible. So today, I will be talking about potentially the most prolific serial killer in U.S. history. That person is Samuel Little. How much do you know about Samuel Little, Sarah?
The name sounds familiar. Can I take a guess?
Go for it.
Was he the guy who was in, like, Augusta area?
I don't think so. Not no. Augusta.
Because I thought they talked about him on the fall line for, like, a hot minute.
They might have mentioned him. I don't know if he was Augusta. Nothing that I found in my research said Augusta.
Okay. We'll see.
Yes, we will learn soon. Okay, so Samuel Little was born on June 7th, 1940, in Reynolds, Georgia. Reynolds is a town that is about 45 minutes southwest of Macon. It sits on the Fall Line Freeway, a series of highways that connect Columbus to Macon and Macon to Augusta.
Aha!
I mean, there's your Augusta connection right there.
I knew.
You called it. And pretty soon after he was born, the family moved to Lorain, Ohio. And before I go any further, I will tell you that while there is a strong Georgia element here, we are going to be going around the country. So get ready for a ride.
I'm ready. I've never been to Ohio.
So as Little grew into his high school years, he began getting into trouble in both Ohio and Nebraska. And in his late 20s, he went to Florida to live with his mother. He claims that during this period, he worked at a cemetery and as an ambulance attendant. It is during this period that he claims that he began traveling the country more often and getting into trouble. By 1975, he had been arrested 26 times in 11 states for crimes such as theft, assault, fraud, attacks on government officials, and attempted rape.
Oof. Quite the rap sheet.
In 1982, Little was arrested in Pascagoula, Mississippi, and charged with the murder of 22-year-old Melinda Rose LaPree, who had gone missing in September of that year. However, a grand jury declined to indict Little for that murder. Pretty soon after that, Little was transferred to Florida to be tried for the murder of 26-year-old Patricia Ann Mount, whose body was found in September of 1982. Multiple witnesses identified Little as a person who had spent time with Mount on the night before her disappearance. However, Little was acquitted in January 1984 of that crime because the witness testimony was deemed circumstantial.
Is circumstantial, like my friend heard from her friend that he was there. Is it that kind of like, or is it just like, oh, I saw him at the party, but no one else did?
I'm no expert in the law by any means, but my interpretation is along the lines of, it's just like, it's word for, like, it's just one person's word versus another. There's no scientific proof to back it up. There's no camera footage so it's basically, it's just like, okay, you have some witnesses.
My aunt said we saw him there.
Maybe not even that. You know, you can have people saying like, I saw him there, but it's still, you know, it's one person's word versus another. There's nothing scientific or anything above and beyond that to back it up. That's my interpretation, at least, of that, how that situation might have played out.
I'll allow it.
Thanks, Your Honor.
You're welcome, son. Continue.
So after his acquittal, Little moved to the San Diego area of California.
Woo-hoo.
Where he was, and you're from the area, right? That's why you whooped.
About an hour outside of there.
There you go. He was arrested in October of 1984 for the kidnapping, beating, and strangulation of 22-year-old Lori Barros, who survived the attack, though.
Yes.
But he must have bailed out or something, because a month after that, he was found by police in his car with an unconscious woman in the back seat who he had also beaten and strangled. But get this. What? He was parked in the exact same location that he'd been in when he attacked Barros.
Okay.
Yeah. And Little did end up going to prison for both of those attacks. They both survived. But he did end up going to prison, but he only served 2.5 years. I feel that sigh.
I want the world to feel my sigh.
Upon his release in February of 1987, Little moved to Los Angeles, where he would go on to commit at least 10 murders.
Is that proven, or?
That is what the source said.
Okay. 10 too many.
So let's fast forward to 2012. Little is arrested at a Louisville, Kentucky homeless shelter and extradited to California to answer for a narcotics charge. The California authorities run his DNA and discover that Little was involved in the murders of Carol Eileen Elford, killed on July 13, 1987, Guadalupe Duarte Apodaca, killed September 3, 1987, and Audrey Nelson Everett, killed on August 14th, 1989.
Is this during that period where he's like, I committed 12... What was the last date?
He was released in February of 1987. Okay. When he moved to Los Angeles. So these are his Los Angeles murders, or at least three of them that were initially caught.
Okay.
So all three of those women had been found dead on the streets of Los Angeles. And so they ran his DNA, and they found out that he was involved that way. So he was charged with these murders, and authorities began looking at the possibility that Little could be involved in other killings. Even the 1982 Melinda LaPree case was reopened at this point. So Little was tried in September of 2014 in a trial that includes the DNA results and testimony from his prior victims who survived. So Little is finally sentenced to life without the possibility of parole.
Oh, the justice system finally worked.
So Little is sitting in prison for, I guess, about 4 years, because in late 2018, Little starts confessing to various murders around the country, eventually coming to a total of 93 confessions. Authorities start looking into the details, and in late 2018, the FBI says that they have confirmed 34 of Little's confessions. But it gets better, because by the end of June 2019, that number had grown to be more than 60 across 14 states. So Little is believed to have been actively murdering between 1970 and 2005. His method of killing was typically beating and strangulation. During the times he was incarcerated, Little took up boxing as a hobby. One of his victims, and the source that I read didn't say which one, would be punched so hard in the abdomen that it broke her spine. To date, Little has been actually convicted of 8 murders, while he has confessed to 93 total. Authorities are still trying to run down his confessions and validate them, but due to their ability to link confessions to crimes, they deem him to be believable. Many of his confessions have panned out, leading to convictions and matches to various murders or Jane Does. Little has also been sketching his victims from memory, providing law enforcement and the public with images to potentially put faces on unknown victims. So let me show you real quick. I'm sorry, for the people listening, you're not going to be able to see this, but you can look it up on the FBI's website, and then the other websites you can find his sketches. But yeah, so here it is. These are all the sketches that he has done himself of his victims.
There's so many.
Yeah, it's just a page full of victims. So that's an overview of Samuel Little and his crimes around the country. But let's take a little time to focus on his Georgia activity. In 1974, Little claims to have killed a 22 or 23-year-old African-American woman in Savannah. Her name or nickname might have been Cat with a K. In 1977, Little claims to have strangled a 30 to 40-year-old African-American woman in Macon, Georgia, and this confession is linked to a Jane Doe. 1980 or 1981, Little claims to have taken a 25 to 30-year-old African-American victim from Chattanooga, Tennessee, and dumped her across state lines in Dade County, Georgia. This confession was matched to a Jane Doe. 1981, Little claims to have killed a 35 to 40-year-old African-American woman in Atlanta. 1982, Little confessed to strangling 18-year-old Fredonia Smith in Macon, Georgia. In either 1983 or 1984, Little confessed to killing a Caucasian woman who was around the age of 26. He claims that she told him that she was from Griffin, Georgia. She was later identified as Leanne Helms, who lived in Griffin but worked in Atlanta. 1984, Little claims to have killed a 23 to 25-year-old African-American woman in Atlanta who may have been a college student, possibly from Spelman, Clark, Georgia State, Tech, or potentially any other college in the area or around the country. 1984, Lil confesses to killing a 23-year-old African-American in Savannah, Georgia. This was later matched to a murder victim named Francis Campbell. Little is suspected of asking Campbell for a date at a bar near the intersection of Montgomery Street and Victory Drive. Campbell's body was discovered in 1985 on top of a pile of debris from the construction of Interstate 516. A Chatham County grand jury recently indicted Little in December 2019 for Campbell's murder. Then those are Samuel Little's confessions in the state of Georgia. Now, granted, he's, I think, 77 years old. While they've matched up a lot of his confessions, there's no way to tell, you know, if what he's remembered is correct or if he's mixing people together, maybe.
Yeah.
So I just want to put in a grain of salt in there that, you know, so far a lot of this has panned out in terms of his confessions, but you never know. You know, he might be mixed up or something like that. And I just know that whenever I'm looking at Jane Doe's from the 70s, 80s, or 90s, I now wonder maybe if Samuel Little might be behind it.
Oh, yeah.
And that is the story of quite possibly the most prolific serial killer in America with Georgia connections.
Ugh, I can't deal with that. It's just the fact that he did so much. And I know at that time it was like, oh, it's just a battery case. Oh, it's just this. But it
yeah,
definitely...
I guess things were pretty different back then.
Yeah. Well done.
Thank you, yes.
That was a lot of
it
information.
It was a lot. He did a lot, unfortunately.
Unfortunately,
yeah.
Good job.
I just want to reiterate again that we're both very excited for the changes and the content that you will be seeing in the coming months. And in the new year, we are ready to hit the ground running. And so we're all glad to have you along for the ride, Couch Constables.
I'm raising my glass. You can't see.
Here's to you.
Here's to you. There you go. Thank you. I can't speak today.
I know I talked about social media earlier, but if you want to get in touch with us over email for any reason, you can email us at cornbreadandcrime@gmail.com. And also, while you're at it, if you are listening to this on iTunes, or even if you're not listening to this on iTunes, if you could do us a big favor and go on to iTunes and rate us, give us a rating, that would be great. We would love that. We'd be very appreciative. We will see you guys later.
We'll see you in a week, guys. Or 2 weeks. A week? 2 weeks? You'll get another one this month. Bye, guys.
Bye.